Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today, on Memorial Day, we will speak with veterans of the Vietnam War, the Gulf War, and the war in Afghanistan. We'll begin with Dr. Philip Butler, a highly decorated combat veteran who was awarded 2 Silver Stars, 2 Legions of Merit, 2 Bronze Stars, and 2 Purple Hearts, and spent 8 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. Then we will speak with Colonel Douglas McGregor, a decorated combat vet who served in the Gulf War and is now a supporter of Ron Paul, who is by far the most popular Republican candidate with veterans and serving military. We will discuss why the author of Warrior's Rage supports a candidate who is against intervention and is often described as anti-war, and why Colonel McGregor opposes Mitt Romney's military and foreign policies. Then finally, we will speak with Jacob George, who served 3 tours in Afghanistan and recently took part in demonstrations against NATO in Chicago, where he and other veterans returned medals that they had been awarded in Iraq and Afghanistan. We will discuss his concerns about America's military of the future that will rely more and more on drones and special operations. And joining us now is Dr. Philip Butler, who is a 1961 graduate of the United States Naval Academy and a former light attack carrier pilot. In 1965, he was shot down over North Vietnam, where he spent 8 years as a prisoner of war. He's a highly decorated combat veteran who was awarded 2 Silver Stars, 2 Legions of Merits, 2 Bronze Stars, and 2 Purple Hearts. He completed his naval career in 1981 as a professor at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, and today serves as a trustee for the Big Sur Land Trust, a docent at Point Lobos State Reserve, and is a peace and justice activist with Veterans for Peace. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Philip Butler.
Thank you, Ed.
And on this Memorial Day, of course, there's some indications of some reflection above and beyond the kind of knee-jerk jingoism and patriotism that we often see that seems very sentimental in many ways, never questioning war, never questioning sacrifice. And it's, I should think, given what happened in Vietnam and Afghanistan, isn't it becoming more and more difficult for the collective kind of consciousness of the country to be so blind as to, you know, that these wars of late really have not solved any problems. They've just created enormous debts, deaths, and, you know, disapproval of the United States. I mean, I'm struggling to think of what we can say. What would you say, Phil, to a veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq?
Well, I'm pleased to see that there are some people on active duty, and I know some veterans who have come home that have awakened to the notion that all of these interventions that we engage ourselves in all over the world is not helping the people in our country, our citizens of the United States, nor is it really helping the people in other countries. These two wars that we've been engaged in, and of course there's more than just Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, as you well know, there's Yemen and all sorts of other places that our military, CIA, and quasi-military are engaged in around the world. It makes me so frustrated and angry to see how long all this stuff is going on. Americans don't have much of a sense of history, but we have just an absolutely incredible history of wars and interventions around the world. Just there's a website I'd like for listeners to have. There's a professor at the Evergreen State College up in Washington. The man's name is Zoltan, Zoltan Grossman, Grossman. And Professor Grossman has made a lifelong study of U.S. interventions around the world. And the last time I went on his website and looked at the number, we had 142 military interventions since Wounded Knee through 2008. So that's just, you know, just stuff happening basically in the 20th century. 142 military interventions in other countries, and that's just the stuff that we've been up to. And I guess this last couple of episodes by George Bush has so affected our economy here that maybe some Americans are finally waking up to the fact that we have hungry and starving people. We have 40,000 people with no health care. We have deteriorating infrastructure. Our educational systems are going to pot. And hello, where's all the money going?
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's 40 million.
40 million. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, 40 million.
40 million without health insurance.
Yeah, thank you.
Actually, I think it's closer to 50, frankly. So tell me, though, when you talk about all the interventions that we've been involved in, we would be involved in more interventions had John McCain become president of the United States. He's been calling for a war with Iran and calling for the U.S. to intervene in Syria. And you served, you spent 8 years as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, longer than, of course, the John McCain. It feels like to me that he never recovered from his defeat in 2008. And he's been sort of waging a war, not just trying to get America into war, but he's been waging a war against President Obama and his legitimacy as a leader. How does that strike you?
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that. I've known John a long time, of course. I know him back at the Naval Academy and in the Navy. And like you say, he joined up with us POWs. I think John was there for 5.5 years. And so he did quite a long time. And then he came home and got his Vietnam, service highly advertised and marketed to get elected to be a senator. A lot of people might think that John McCain was the only guy that had bad treatment in North Vietnam, but in fact, over 90% of us were tortured at least once over there. We used to say the Vietnamese were very democratic about how they treated American POWs. But anyway, yeah, he's an incredible knothead and hawk. He, as an individual, as a person, he has really bad temper. You know, he can fly off the handle and get angry at a moment's notice. So, thankfully, he decided to select an idiot to be his running mate for vice president. And I think probably that's what defeated him. Otherwise, he might have beaten Obama if he had had anybody sensible as his vice presidential nominee.
Well, the other presidential nominee now, of course, on the Republican ticket is Mitt Romney. And what I find extraordinary about Mitt Romney is that he's been running for president for over 10 years and has never bothered to tutor himself about foreign policy or military policy and would outsource it all to the neoconservatives, the very people that brought us the Iraq War.
Just a few weeks ago, Romney made the statement that the Soviet Union was our number one enemy. He hadn't picked up on the fact that the Soviet Union is defunct after like 1989. So for over 20 years, it's been Russia, not Soviet Union, and he had absolutely no clue about the status of our relations with Russia. And like you just said, he has no clue about foreign policy at all.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Philip Butler, who spent 8 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. He's a highly decorated combat veteran who was awarded 2 Silver Stars, 2 Legions of Merits, 2 Bronze Stars, and 2 Purple Hearts. And he today is a trustee of the Big Sur Land Trust and a peace and justice activist with Veterans for Peace. On this Memorial Day, Phil Butler, is there any sense then of the debate getting wider in terms of the military about what the purpose and the use of American military power should be? The New York Times is covering on Memorial Day, has an article about how there's a spirited debate going on inside West Point over the recent policies, going back to George W. Bush's announcement at West Point of his doctrine of intervening. The impression I get is that the soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan pretty much have had to accept the fact that it was really all that blood and treasure and sacrifice wasn't for very much at all. In fact, that's what these general officers are saying at West Point.
Well, I certainly hope that they come to that conclusion, to the proper conclusion. It didn't really happen with people coming home from Vietnam. There were a couple of years after I came home from Vietnam in 1973. I had high hopes that the United States had finally learned, but I still hear many of my fellow Vietnam veterans saying, that was a war we should have won, and the only reason we didn't win it was because we were stopped by the politicians and we weren't allowed to pursue it to the fullest state. I mean, you know, that right-wing rhetoric, notwithstanding the fact that we killed 2 million Vietnamese people, and notwithstanding the fact that they have their own country and government right now, and they seem to be doing just fine without our help.
And indeed, you can make the argument that as long as we're fighting the Vietnamese, we would lose, and the leading first world country, the dominant power in the world, could not break the will of a third world country. But the minute we stopped fighting them, they immediately turned around and wanted our economic help.
So I think the same thing's true with Afghanistan. It's almost a copy, you know, of the Vietnam example. It's sort of the same thing. You know, we could pour troops into Afghanistan until we were blue in the face. We could get 500,000 troops in Afghanistan, and we'd never really defeat Afghanistan, because what's Afghanistan? It's a whole bunch of tribes of people whose culture are so dramatically different from ours that we wouldn't have a clue.
Well, but I guess the point being that maybe we should find other ways to employ our power and influence as opposed to at the tip of the bayonet, you know, that maybe we should be thinking more of if humanitarian aid and nation building are the challenges of the future. Maybe we should revitalize the Peace Corps.
Well, you know, when Eisenhower talked about the military-industrial complex, which, of course, was a very prescient and thing for him to say, if he were alive today, he'd be astounded, I think, at how much his prediction came true. I mean, just for example, if you go on the internet and take a look at what we actually have, if you tally up all in just within the 50 United States, if you tally up all the major and minor military bases, all the small depots, all the CIA and FBI black site facilities where they're listening in, you know, to conversations and stuff, if you did that throughout the 50 United States, you come up with a pretty big number, and the number is 6,000. We have 6,000 military bases and installations of various types inside the United States. And we have approximately 1,000 U.S. military bases and facilities in other countries in the world, along with 325,000 military and civilian personnel. Now, that's a hell of a structure. And we've got a government, a politic, and an economy that's structured to exist with that. So it's going to be a very difficult thing to turn that around. And I do believe it's going to take a couple of generations, even if we were to get started on it right now.
So just sort of pulling back into a broader context, and Dr. Phil Butler, do you think that the American Republic will survive the American Empire?
I don't know, but I think the American Empire is going to crash economically, financially, and then Americans will have to take a look at restoring the Republic. Americans have always been good at, you know, being quick and moving, quick on their feet and moving, and they're good with innovation and business and so forth. So at some point down the line, there's hope, but boy, we sure are at a deficit right now. If you just look at where we are with education and healthcare compared to other countries in the world, we rank way, way down the line. We've really drop back, notwithstanding the fact that we've lost our moral authority over people in the rest of the world with all the torture and black sites and stuff that we've done during the Bush administration, and some things are continuing today under the Obama administration.
Well, just in closing, Dr. Phil Butler, do you see a change in our military doctrine with General Petraeus, who led, of course, the counterinsurgency idea, which eventually it looks like Vice President Biden was able to thwart that. You know, Petraeus is basically saying we'd be in Afghanistan for generations. Like, he couldn't give an exit date. And clearly, it's just untenable. And NATO and the U.S. are pulling out, albeit they're going to leave some troops behind. But the impression I get is that now that Petraeus is at the CIA, some people say, well, you know, that shows you how the militarization of our intelligence. But then other people say, well, it actually is the opposite. It's the military getting more like the CIA with a smaller footprint and more specialized, you know, special forces units. And that's where the emphasis is on robotics, drones, and special forces. Do you see that? Because I imagine the military-industrial complex will want to keep selling expensive weapons, so they wouldn't be too happy with that kind of a downsized force.
I think that that sort of a militarization is made to order, because I think it suits the military-industrial complex and it anesthetizes the American public if they don't see young people being slaughtered and killed, and there's no draft, and there's just volunteers and people sitting at Nellis Air Force Base that can push buttons and kill people in other countries in the world with drones. I mean, it's just sort of a made-to-order new militarization. But, you know, the United States is going to come a day when other countries that are irritated with us and don't like us, and they have this technology too. For example, China and probably other countries in the world, Russia and other countries, may say, fine, you want to do this? We can play this game too. So we really, in my opinion, need to pull in our horns. We need to tend to our knitting here at home. We need to rebuild our society and our culture here in the United States and retake a look at our morality and become a beacon of light, positive beacon of light to people in other countries in the world like maybe at some time in the past. We were, and that's the best way, in my opinion, that we can continue to defend ourselves against terrorism or any other sorts of military authorities from other countries.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Dr. Philip Butler.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Philip Butler, who was a 1961 graduate of the United States Naval Academy and a former light attack carrier pilot. In 1965, he was shot down over North Vietnam, where he spent 8 years as a prisoner of war. He's a highly decorated combat veteran who was awarded 2 Silver Stars, 2 Legions of Merits, 2 Bronze Stars, and 2 Purple Hearts. He completed his naval career in 1981 as a professor at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, and today serves as a trustee for the Big Sur Land Trust, a docent at Point Lobos State Reserve, and he is a peace and justice activist with Veterans for Peace. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with Colonel McGregor, who is campaigning for Ron Paul.
Find the cost of freedom.